Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Everybody, happy Friday. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. This is episode number 34, here at the beginning of November 2017. Happy NaNoWriMo. We who are about to write salute you. Best of luck and shout out to all my writer friends who are trying out for who are trying to win NaNoWriMo this year. I hope you get your 50,000 words. I hope you get many more, you know. But it is November. Those of us with day jobs are very busy, especially if, like me, you're in academia. Very busy indeed. That's all right. Tonight, I'm going to be reading from the work of C. Gockel, indie author Carolyn Gockel. I'm very excited for this. C. Gockel has been sort of in my sphere of awareness for a few years, mostly through K-boards, as many indie authors come into my sphere of awareness. She has this long-running urban fantasy series called I Bring the Fire. And if you haven't seen these are cool covers. They're like these people in like suits of armor, and then they're like cool titles of the individual books, like Wolves and Chaos and stuff, and there are gods, and it's good branding. I have to confess I haven't read it because I'm not really an urban fantasy guy. But they look really cool. What I'm excited about is C. Gockel's science fiction. Oh, yeah. So that's what I'm going to be reading from tonight. The first book in her Archangel Project series, which is Archangel Down. I'm going to begin, as always, by reading the author bio on Amazon. So this is C. Gockel's Amazon author bio. C. Gockel has been writing stories for her friends and family since the Dark Ages, i.e., before word processors existed. A few years ago, she started posting those stories to the intertubes. She received emails, messages, and reviews from her fans telling her she should do this professionally. She didn't. She is a coward, and life as a digital designer, copywriter, and coder is more dependable. But, in the end, her husband's nagging wore her down. You could be the next 50 Shades of Grey, and I could retire! Unfortunately, the author writes science fiction and fantasy, and isn't particularly good at writing erotica. She is sad about this. She'd love for her husband to be able to retire and just work for her, so she could nag him. At the moment, Miss Gockel is working on the next installment of After the Fire. Miss Gockel loves to hear from readers. She can be reached by email at cgockel.publishing@gmail.com. Her Facebook page is https://www.facebook.com/cgockelwrites. All right, so there you have it. And if you go to her Amazon author bio, and as always, I'll have a link to that in the show notes, as well as a link to her actual website, you're going to see a nice, healthy list here. 12 books. There's the I Bring the Fire series, and she's got a box set of the first few of those. There's also the Archangel Project, as I've mentioned. There's something new called After the Fire, which I believe is related to the I Bring the Fire series, and that's what she was mentioning in her bio there. The first book of that is called Soulmarked. That just came out in September. If you enjoy urban fantasy, I'd highly recommend checking that out, because I'm guessing by now, well, she says she's been writing since the Dark Ages, so I'm guessing by now she's honed her craft in that genre pretty well. You'd probably find something that you really enjoy. And then she's got a number of other things that you can check out there. I really enjoyed performing this reading from Archangel Down, and I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons why. Seagockle's prose, Carolyn's prose, is really, really polished. Just really well done. It is an easy fix if you're writing genre fiction to write, I think, an easy fix to hook readers to just write with a really, really, really fast pace. That's what I do. I kind of sell it as a strength in my prose, but if I'm being honest with myself, I wish I didn't have to do it. I kind of feel like it's a crutch. I feel like I get bogged down in exposition if I try to do a lot of exposition because I just don't feel like I know how to do it well. She does it well. I'm here to tell you. Actually, this first chapter is long. She writes pretty long, guys. The book is a little over 400 pages. This first chapter itself is just long, 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 long. It's like 40 locations or something on my Kindle. So I actually only read like the first half of it. So sorry, C, Carolyn. I didn't read the whole chapter for time. But it's so well done. I'm just intrigued by the characters. I'm seeing things through their eyes. Oh my gosh, the sort of, I want to say text painting, which is totally like a musician's term, a classical singer's term. But the sort of, not the world building, although the world building is fine too, but the way that she draws you into the scene with all of your senses, with the sight, the lighting, the smells, the temperature, what you're hearing, it's so well done. And there's lots of exposition, there's lots of backstory, but it's woven really seamlessly into the action. Right out the gate, the stakes are high for the main character. You care about her. There is a lot of suspense rolling, even though it's kind of a slow burn. And for the record, I think slow burn suspense is the best. Holler at me, Twin Peaks fans. Am I right? So, yeah, could not say enough good about the reading you're about to hear. I certainly hope you enjoy it. I want to remind everyone, as always, this reading is done with the author's permission, and it does not come from an official audiobook. If you're interested in Seagockle's audiobooks, go to her website or her Amazon author page. Check those out. Again, links to those in the show notes. And lastly, C has been on my favorite podcast, the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast, not just once, but twice. And I always find that show a real pleasure to listen to. And I found her to be a very informative and delightful guest. So I'm going to link to both of those episodes as well in the show notes of this episode of the Book Speaks podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. I really appreciate it. If you're listening to this show because you enjoy science fiction in particular, quick plug for myself. I'm writing science fiction. you can get to my own stuff, the Starship Fairfax series, also from the show notes. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you again next week, and I hope you enjoy this reading from Seagockle's Archangel Down. Archangel Down. The Archangel Project, Book 1. By Seagockle. In the year 2432, humans think they are alone in the universe. They're wrong. Commander Noah Sato plans a peaceful leave on her home planet, Ludicea, but winds up interrogated and imprisoned for her involvement in the Archangel Project, a project she knows nothing about. Professor James Sinclair wakes up in the snow, not remembering the past 24 hours or knowing why he is being pursued. The only thing he knows is that he has to find Commander Sato, a woman he's never met. A military officer from the colonies, and a civilian from old Earth, they couldn't have less in common. But they have to work together to save the lives of millions and their own. Every step of the way, they are haunted by the final words of a secret transmission. The Archangel is down. Chapter 1.
We know you are a part of the Archangel Project.
Commander Noah Sato of the Galactic Fleet glared across the table. Two men wearing the dark green uniforms of Planet Ludicea's local guard glared back at her. Her arms were shackled behind her back to the cold metal chair she sat on. The room was chilly. She could smell the cold of it, along with the odors of various bodily fluids. Her back ached. Her mouth was as dry as Lizar's skin, and she thought the bright lights of the interrogation room might leave her permanently blind.
"I told you, I don't know what you're talking about," she spat. "Then why are you here?"
"I'm on leave," she explained for the 100th time. "I thought I'd spend my vacation visiting my brother on the planet where I grew up. Is that so difficult to understand?"
Agitated, she spun her engagement and wedding rings around on her finger.
Closing her eyes, she thought of her brother, Kenji, and inwardly begged his forgiveness. When they'd picked her up, she'd assumed this was all a misunderstanding. She hadn't meant to pull him into this.
"I've had enough," said one of the Inquisitors.
A pair of sharp, pointed pliers emerged in his hand, and suddenly he was on Noah's side of the table. "Do you understand what I can do with these?"
Noah tried to keep from screaming and woke up in the darkness, her whole body shaking, her breathing so fast and ragged, her ribs hurt, cold air stinging her lungs. The darkness smelled like cold and various bodily fluids, an unhappy constant with the nightmare. She rubbed her eyes. But the rest had been just a dream. They hadn't used those pliers, except to scare her during the interrogation. When she hadn't told them what they wanted to hear, they'd brought her to this camp. She blinked. Was it unusually bright in the barracks? Stifling a groan, she sat up. Her vision immediately went black. She tried to access the reason why, and for the millionth time remembered her neural interface had been deactivated since she'd arrived here. Sucking in a sharp breath, she clutched her head, fingers drifting to the smooth, cool surface of the neural interface in her left temple. The guards were fond of parroting, "Freedom from information streams is the path to real wisdom," but it was torture, not freedom. Noah's body swayed. Why was she dizzy? It couldn't be Ludicea's gravity. The planet's gravity was the same as Earth's and standard starship grav. Was it malnutrition or something more sinister? She bit her lip to stifle a bitter laugh. She was being slowly starved to death. How much more sinister could it get? The spell finally passed, and she surveyed the barracks. All around her were rough wooden bunks, four platforms tall.
The beds were narrower than the single bunks on a starship, but each was shared by up to 3 women packed chest to back beneath thin blankets and without pillows. She could make out their faces, just barely, but it was definitely lighter in the barracks. Noah looked down at her bedmate, Ashley. Noah's skin was dark as straight earth coffee. Ashley's was what Tim's people would call peaches and cream. It made Ashley's delicate features easy to see, even in low light. As she slept, clutching her crutch like a pillow, her face looked peaceful and her breathing was gentle. Not wanting to wake her, Noah gently folded her side of the blanket over Ashley's sleeping form. Slipping down the slats at the end of the bed, she padded to the window. Peering through the dirty glass, she caught her breath. Sure enough, thick white flakes of snow drifted from the sky, sparkling in the camp's harsh spotlights. Their barracks was close to the barbed wire fence that enclosed them, and she could just make out snow catching on the Lutetian pines in the surrounding forest. Noah pressed a hand to the window. The snow on the dense foliage would throw off heat-seeking scanners, and the thick branches would throw off radar, but it wasn't bitterly cold. Yet. If they were going to escape, now was the time. Her brow furrowed, and she touched her interface. She squinted at the clouds as though she could will herself to see through them. Somewhere above their heads, the satellite that was Time Gate 8 floated just outside the atmosphere above Lutetia's equator. The gate allowed instantaneous travel to any other system that had a gate of its own. It also sent and received data. Time Gate 8 and the other satellites that orbited around Lutetia's equator acted as relay stations for the vast data traffic of the Ethernet. And, she thought more darkly, if her neural interface couldn't be activated, the satellites would serve as useful landmarks for navigation if the snow let up. Dropping her hand to the side, she balled it into a fist and bowed her head. As a pilot of the Galactic Republic fleet, she'd been given POW training. She was taught to stay put, to obey orders, and not to make foolish escape plans. She closed her eyes. But there was no war going on, and she wasn't the captive of some pirate clan. She was in a concentration camp on her home world, Lutetia, which hadn't declared independence from the Republic. Opening her eyes, she looked down at her wrist. A black H and a number had been tattooed there, barely visible against her dark skin. She'd been captured, interrogated, and interned without a trial for being, in the guard's words, a heretic. Not an admissible crime in the Republic. If the fleet had known she was here, she'd have been rescued by now. Her hands formed fists at her sides. Kenji should have reported her missing. If he hadn't reported her missing, it had to mean he'd been interned too. Spinning on her heels, she went back to her bunk. A few moments later, she was leaning over her bedmate, gently shaking her shoulder. Ashley. Ashley, wake up. It's time to leave.
Ashley rolled over onto her back. Her eyes opened, visibly blue in the snow brightness. She stared at Noah dumbly.
Today is the day, Noah whispered. It's snowing.
Ashley put a hand to her head and ran it through her sparse hair. They'd all been shaved when they'd arrived. A tattooed A for augment stood out on her wrist like a black scar. Ashley's fingers went longingly to her neural interface, just as Noah's had. About 3 centimeters in diameter, the interfaces were made of copper with titanium and polyfiber exteriors. At the center of each was a circular port that could be hardwired directly to external computer systems via cable. But it was more common to use the internal wireless transmitters. Around the central port, tiny drives, the width and breadth of fingernails, were arranged. When functioning, they could be used for app insertion. Normally, Noah thought neural interfaces looked like flowers. The tiny drives surrounding the central ports like petals. But, like every prisoner in the camp, Ashley had a large, ugly, black polyfiber screw jammed into her interface port. The screw disrupted the flow of electrons between neurons and nanos and completely jammed their wireless transmitters. It was a primitive but very effective way to keep inmates from accessing their neural interfaces and the wider universe with their minds.
We have to get ready before the others get up,
Noah whispered. Ashley stared at her a beat too long, but then sat up and quietly handed Noah her crutch. Noah slid off the bed and down the ladder, crutch in hand, and waited for Ashley. When Ashley had first arrived at the camp, she had a cybernetic limb, her augment, having lost her left leg to an accident as a teenager. The guards had ripped the leg off on Ashley's arrival. No anesthesia, of course. Noah scowled in the darkness, anger bubbling in her gut on Ashley's behalf. Noah's thumb went to the stumps of the fingers on her left hand. Her ring finger and pinky had been removed, for different reasons than Ashley's leg, but at least Noah's surgery had been quick. Ashley stumbled over the side of the bed, and Noah helped her down the ladder. Instead of giving Ashley her noisy wooden crutch, Noah swung Ashley's arm over her shoulder. Together, they went to the corner of the room. There was a waste bin there, reeking of vomit. As they drew close, a few scrawny rats scrambled out over the edge. Ashley gasped, and Noah put a finger to her lip for silence as the filthy creatures darted into the shadows. Holding back her bile, Noah gave Ashley her crutch, released her, and then rolled the waste bin to the side. Ashley immediately went to her good knee and lifted a small piece of floorboard. She pulled out a sack and carefully unwrapped it. Inside were a few pieces of bread they'd painstakingly saved over the last 2 weeks. There were also a few tools in the bundle. Ashley was a cybernetics engineer.
Noah wondered if it was her engineering ability, as much as her cybernetic leg, that had gotten her thrown into the camp. Noah's hand fluttered up to her interface. Almost everyone but the most strident fundamentalist Ludicheans were augmented in some way or another in this day and age.
"It's all here,"
Ashley whispered, snapping Noah back to the present. Noah's bunkmate had created the tools in the bundle from bits of glass, scavenged wire, and castaway cybernetic parts, along with a precious pair of pliers to remove the bolt. There was also, miracle of miracles, a shattered comm chip that Ashley had cemented together with nail polish she'd stolen from a guard. The size of a fingernail, the comm chip glittered in the low light. Slipping the chip into a neural drive would give Ashley or Noah the ability to listen to the restricted frequencies the Ludicheans were using.
"Well done, Ashley,"
Noah whispered, patting the woman's shoulder. She couldn't help but notice that Ashley was trembling. Outside, she heard guards talking to one another, debating who would wake up which barracks.
"Tie it up and be ready," Noah said. "As soon as people start waking, we offer to take corpse patrol."
No one wanted corpse patrol. It meant being last in the breakfast line, among other things. Visibly shaking, Ashley replaced the board. Noah quickly rolled the waste bin back over it and helped Ashley up. Outside, she heard the guards laughing and their footsteps approaching. Any moment they'd come in. Trembling beside her, Ashley said,
"Noah, I can't go with you."
Noah looked at her sharply, uncertain of what she'd just heard.
"What?"
Not meeting her eyes, clutching the tiny bundle to her stomach, Ashley said,
"I'll slow you down."
"No," Noah lied.
"You won't."
Noah was taller by at least 4 inches. Leaning down, she put her hands on Ashley's shoulders. There was a tear running down Ashley's cheek. Noah wiped it away without thinking. She felt her gut constrict. Ashley didn't look well. She was paler than even Tim had been, and he'd been blonde, blue-eyed, and genuine Aryan purist stock. Ashley and Noah had bonded over their skin coloring when they'd first met. They were both throwbacks to an era people considered less enlightened, when humans had been many races instead of one. People like Noah and Ashley were reminders of that time. It made people nervous and, ironically, prejudiced. It had been a superficial reason to bond, and it could have backfired spectacularly when Noah had first voiced her escape ideas. But Noah had sensed bravery and mettle in Ashley, and knew she wouldn't betray her.
"I need you, Ashley,"
she whispered. She didn't want to carry out their escape plans alone. Hunching her shoulders, Ashley looked at the floor. Trying to ease her fears with a laugh, Noah said,
"If you don't come, who will listen to all my crazy schemes and tell me they won't work? Who will tell me to shut up when I'm whining
Who will kick me when I snore?
Ashley's eyes lifted. Noah tilted her head and gave Ashley what Tim used to call her best cornball grin. Although Noah had some acquaintance with corn, she wasn't sure what a cornball was. Probably some Aryan Europa purist isolationist thing Tim's people did. Some sort of weird ball sport? Whatever it was, the grin had always worked on Tim, and usually worked with her friend. Instead, Ashley whimpered.
Don't make this worse. You don't need me, Noah. I showed you how to remove the bolt and turn your neural interface back on. You can move more quickly without me.
Noah squeezed her shoulder.
Ashley, starmen do not leave starmen behind.
I'm not a starman, Ashley protested, wiping her eyes.
I can't leave you here, Noah whispered back.
There was a part of her that wanted to, that was afraid of having to half-carry Ashley through the snow and wilderness.
Starmen didn't give in to fear.
Ashley closed her eyes.
Yes, you can. And you have to. You have to tell people about this place. If you tell them, they'll come for us, and the nightmare will end. You could be dead before that happens, Noah whispered, the reek of the vomit in the bin creeping into her consciousness.
People died here all the time, of illness, injuries, and starvation.
I won't die, Ashley whispered.
Every muscle in Noah's body tensed. Ashley was too smart to believe that. Putting her hand on Noah's arm, Ashley whispered,
And you have to go rescue your brother. From what you told me, he's in much worse danger than I am.
Noah swallowed. Most of her family had left Ludechea, complaining that it was becoming more fundamentalist. But Noah's brother Kenji had left and then come back. Considering what Kenji was, that was especially crazy. Oh, nebulas. What would they do to Kenji? If they permanently deactivated his neural interface and deep neural implants? The door to the barracks opened, and one of the guard women strode in. The guard was new and wore fresh Ludechean green. Layers and layers of it. She looked so warm. Noah hugged herself instinctively. The guard had the amalgamation of East Asian East Indian features that were most common. East Asian eyes, straight nose, full lips, tan skin, and black hair. She was very tall, and Noah noted enviously, well-fed. The woman bellowed,
Up, all of you!
Around them, the women cried and rose from their bunks. Leaning to Ashley's ear, Noah whispered,
Do you want to wait until another day?
Her fingers twitched at her sides. The longer they stayed here, the weaker they became. But maybe Ashley's pallor was due to illness? Sometimes people here recovered from minor illnesses. Sometimes. Ashley pushed the bundle at Noah's chest. Noah quickly tucked it in the waistband of the second-hand rags that served as pants. Her own clothes had been confiscated. Ashley whispered,
If you don't go, I'll tell them you are planning to escape. Rocking back on her feet, Noah's eyes went wide. The women in the barracks began stumbling into the line that went to the mess hall. Grabbing her crutch, Ashley hobbled quickly toward them. Noah chased her, feeling anger and dismay welling in her chest.
Ashley, wait!
Ashley turned back. Wavering on her crutch, she hissed.
I'll scream, I swear it.
Noah stopped in her tracks.
Why aren't you getting in line?
The guard bellowed at Ashley.
I don't want to sleep with this woman anymore,
Ashley said, shaking her crutch in Noah's direction. She curled up her lip and stammered,
Filthy African!
Noah's jaw fell. It was the language of the European purists, a group to which Ashley didn't belong. She was like Noah, a random winner of a genetic lottery who looked like one of the old races. There were sharp chuckles from the women in line, maybe enjoying the irony of one perceived purist insulting another. If the guard hadn't been new, she would have smelled the lie. Ashley and Noah had been friends since their arrival. But the guard was fooled. Huffing, she said,
Stupid Europa, get in line. And you!
She pointed at Noah. Noah threw up her hands and moved to the line, but then her eyes slid to Ashley. The other woman was mouthing the words, Go, go, go. Noah's lip curled in despair and fury. Her eyes blurred. Stupid, selfless, brave Ashley. Noah was going to curse her name for years. She already knew it. Sucking in a sharp breath, she said to the guard,
I'm on corpse duty.
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.